Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Less chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm Josh and I'm joined, as always, by Hugo.
Hello.
And we are going to be talking about human rights and do they exist? Do they not? Where do they come from?
Yes.
How should we interpret them? All sorts of useful stuff.
Exactly. And that the first question that you ask is something that I actually wanted to ask you, because before this we had a conversation about human rights, and you kind of mentioned in the beginning that you thought that human rights as in inherent rights, natural rights, did not exist. But then we talked about it some more, and you kind of came around a little bit to my position, and so that was that's something that I think it's quite interesting to mention at the start.
So just to kind of catch you up to speed with our conversation off camera, we talked about natural rights and legal rights, and these are two different interpretations, which we're going to get onto in a minute.
Yes.
But I got a bit hung up on the term natural rights, as if nature endows us with rights that are inherent to us. But it's more that it is an aspect of nature, that things such as having to eat, having to drink, that we cannot really escape, and therefore we have a claim to have rights for these things. Is that more or less right, I think?
Well, I would frame it a little bit differently, but I mean, I get your point. I think that the main kind of sticking point when it comes to whether human rights exist or not is that some people might say, well, rights are only a result of interactions between humans and what people agree on, what they're going to respect, how they're going to relate to each other, right? And so that's where human rights might come from. But the other viewpoint is that there is something about human rights that is not just based on social interactions and how people see themselves or each other. It's more about what is inherent to people by the virtue of them being people in the first place. And so I kind of wanted to lay out the case for why I think that is something that makes sense to discuss, right? Why it's not the case that there are just some rights that we agree on or are respected in society as a whole. And so I think what it comes down to is as a person, what makes you a person is having some kind of consciousness, some kind of sense of self. And what that means is that you're aware of your individuality, you're aware of you being a different person than the person next to you, and of being aware that you can perform actions and that those actions can be traced back to you. And therefore, then that kind of also means that other people can place responsibility on you for those actions, because you have a choice in either performing those actions or not performing those actions. And so that's where I think this kind of lies, in that sense of, you know, self and personality and consciousness and individuality. And so that's I think the basis of human rights and what it kind of leads to is the cornerstone of you owning your own body, being the owner of your own body, which is where I think all the other natural or inherent rights come from. And why that is because of those preconditions that I was talking about self and consciousness, these things. And then if you own your body, that means that it's wrong for someone else to intrude on it or to do something with your body that you don't approve of and you don't consent to. And so that also means then, well, when you do something with your hands, with your effort, when you transform something external to you, something unowned, well, then you start owning it because you mix your labor with that unowned thing. That's kind of the Lockean formula for ownership. And that justifies in Locke's eyes, and I think that's a reasonable standard, it justifies you owning the thing when something that was previously unowned becomes something else through your effort. And then you have a right to control that partly your thing and partly previously unknown thing. That's how kind of ownership or private ownership, private property comes about.
And I think that's kind of something that's understood throughout history as well. Like you have it where people would move to kind of uncharted territory. They would kind of hammer some stakes into the ground, just like, this is my plot of land.
Yep.
I've claimed it. And then people more or less respected that and understood, okay, they've got the claim to that land, even though they didn't have like the horrendous legalistic process that we have now to own land. Yeah. I mean, it was a lot simpler, but also people respected it just as much because they understood that they have a claim to that, a moral claim, ultimately, because of course, whether they're natural rights or legal rights, they're still both informed by your perception of morality.
Yes.
And it's just two different interpretations of where that morality is either derived or how it can manifest, depending on who you are.
And of course, in the world today, like most things are owned by someone. It's rare, especially if you live in the middle of some kind of civilization. It's rare to encounter something that is unowned. And so it might seem kind of counterintuitive, but as you say, in history, that's happened a lot. I mean, that's been a lot. Most of history has been kind of appropriating unknown things. And if you think about that philosophically, the only alternative to appropriating unknown things and that being morally right is that no one owns anything and no one can own anything, which is basically a non-starter, because that doesn't solve the issue that you're presented with. And then the other alternative is that everyone owns everything, even though no one's encountered it yet.
Yeah, that just doesn't make any sense.
The communistic point of view. I mean, I think it does make sense, but it's not practical in any way. It's not something that that could be actionable, just because that would mean that for something to be done with any object, with any kind of property, you would need everyone's consent to do it, which is impossible, which is like not just impractical, but it's actually impossible. And if that was the moral standard, well, then everyone would just die immediately. And so I'm not exaggerating, because to use everyone else's, to use your property, every kind of article of your property, you would need everyone else's consent, everyone else's on earth, because everyone owns everything. So that is a non-starter as well, I think. And so the only alternative is that if there's something unowned, you can come to own it, and then other people are excluded from owning it, but you're justified in owning it because you mixed your labor with it.
And I think we're going to see that more in space than anywhere else on Earth, maybe. I think people are already trying to claim asteroids that are rich in minerals and stuff like that, because, of course, no one has a claim to them.
Yep. And some kind of standard like that will need to be agreed upon to be able to adjudicate claims like that, because, well, what does it mean to mix your labor? Does it mean to land on it? Does it mean to just start working on it? Like, and where's the boundary? Like, things like that. But that's something that used to happen in history, even though it rarely happens now when it comes to land on Earth. And so I think you can go back in history and see where that kind of how that went, and what kind of standards there were. And I don't think we have to start from the beginning in adjudicating those cases.
Yeah. So in the case of land ownership, that's something that was probably seen originally as a natural right, although they wouldn't have perhaps characterized it in that way.
Yep.
But it's now kind of moved onto a legal right, and it kind of shows how the same thing can change over time based on how people perceive it morally, I suppose.
And I want to say a couple of things. Just because something also becomes a legal right doesn't mean it stops being a natural right.
Of course, yeah.
And also that we never really introduced the main divides between different conceptions of rights. And this particular dividing line that we're talking about now is between natural rights and legal rights. And what that involves is whether people have rights in and of themselves, whether it's inherent in them as people, or whether it's something that arises in society. That's something that I talked about in the beginning, but I never gave it those names. So when you say legal rights, that's what you mean, is that the rights come from the legal system and are a product of that legal system.
I think most of the rights that are kind of up for debate and being proposed now are a form of legal right. It's something that isn't necessarily intrinsic to human beings. You see people saying, oh, healthcare is a human right. Well, I mean, before there was such a thing as healthcare, it's very difficult to argue that. Therefore, it is clearly something that is contrived and a legal right. Yeah. And it's more closely associated with that than saying you have a right to, you know, exist or
but
something
it,
like
but
that.
But it's even clearer with things like the internet, right? Because you can say, well, healthcare has always been there in some form or the other, so you have to have the standard appropriate to that age, but internet hasn't. So that's a much clearer case of what you just said.
Yeah, I think there's a stronger case for having a right to access to the internet now as well, because it's basically impossible to have a job or function in a society without some degree of access to the internet. Not suggesting that, you know, the government should mandate it, because of course when people are saying, oh, you have a right to such and such, what they quite often mean is you have a right to get given this for free through a socialistic government practice. But this is probably jumping onto something we're going to touch on later. Yeah. But there's a notion of rights as being the government cannot infringe on this, which is the negative liberty position. And the government should kind of help you out with something, which is the positive liberty position. But we're going to touch on that later, and I'm kind of spoiling it.
But I did want to mention something that I find interesting in today's kind of political climate and political discussion, and that is that if you say that people have the right to X, what they mean is dependent on what X is, right? And so when it comes to some things, it means the government can't do something to prevent you from enjoying X or obtaining X or kind of doing something with it if you already have it.
So a good example of the government can't prevent you is the First Amendment, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
The right to, you cannot have your free speech infringed.
Yep. And then you have the other example, which applies in other cases for some reason, where if you say someone has a right to X, that automatically means the government should be the sole provider of X, and X should be provided by government to everyone for free, in exchange, like paid by taxes, of course. And so those two things are very different, but they are people talk about them. People use the same words to refer to them, and I don't understand exactly why, because you could use that word to mean the same thing in every case, right? But with some class of things, you use it to mean something, and with some other class, you mean something. I presume that that's just kind of a historical development thing, from politics.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you, that's a result of kind of political campaigning and kind of manipulation, let's say propaganda, like these things. Like it sounds bad, but with some of these topics, it's come to a point where it's spoken of that way that often that everyone just sees it that way automatically and doesn't consider that that it's really weird that it means something else than if you use the same word elsewhere.
There's always a good way of telling between the two is that you can change the word right mm-hmm. with freedom. So you could say you have freedom from the government infringing your free speech.
Yes.
That doesn't sound too weird. That sounds like something that works. But if you say you have the freedom to have the government provide you with free internet, that sounds really strange. Like, what's freedom got to do with it?
And also, I wanted to stress that if you talk about, for example, the right to healthcare, like what I meant with my little monologue before, it was that you could say that a right to healthcare means that, well, healthcare should be nationalized and it should be free at the point mm-hmm. of and the point of provision, and so that is what it means. Or it could mean that the government has no right stopping you from getting healthcare if you need it.
So the funny thing is that one of those I agree with and the other I don't.
Yep.
Obviously, I think the government shouldn't prevent you from getting healthcare if you want it.
Yeah.
Particularly at the minute. Wink, wink. But obviously saying that the government should be a monopoly on healthcare is something that I don't agree with.
Because partly like what you're doing is also mm-hmm. saying, well, people can't go to other providers mm-hmm. and get healthcare from them.
Exactly.
So what are you going to do? What are you going to do with that? Like, you're mm-hmm. restricting people from some ideological goals and purposes, which is not really
so
nice of you.
Two people could say you have a right to healthcare and mean different things. And that is, I think, the key takeaway from what you're saying.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus T&Cs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.